hosted by Todd Donald and friends. Todd's Cafe is a podcast shamelessly reaching for catharsis via comedy, compassion, and interaction.
It's just what everybody's doing. It's just what everybody does. Until there's no one left to ruin. It's just what everybody does.
It's been a little while, but we're back in action. I'm your host and producer, Todd Donald, and you're listening to Todd's Cafe, a conversation podcast based in Waterloo, Ontario. And I'm going to start off the news in Todd's Cafe world in reverse order. Belated Happy Canada Day. We are a year older as a country. Also, my co-host Katie Warren is now Katie Topham. Congratulations to my co-host and her lovely husband, Ryan. It was a beautiful day, and I felt privileged to be there as a witness. I've recorded a week and a half ago a lovely conversation record with author, poet, and friend Roshan James, whose book you might have seen me Instagram a while back. I was in Chapters that day in a hurry, and this lady was ogling her book, and I was like, fuck, I don't have time. And that's how our friendship started. But it's cool. That will be the next episode. But Todd's Cafe is backed up a little bit more than that, even. I have a chat I did on June 3rd with the ladies you're going to hear in this episode, 18. Emily Shuley is a Torontonian filmmaker, director, actress, and more here on the show to talk about starring in a multi-size production being featured in September 2018's Outfest as The Frog King. The Frog King and its shorter and longer iterations were written by Hamiltonian playwright Erica Reeser, who is my other guest, and the three of us will be talking about The Frog King, about their lives, about the world they live in, the queer community, and we open up about how we learn to be the best that we can be in this stage in our lives. Fuck, I love that pun I just made. The best that we can be at being a part of a world that accepts and embraces and loves everyone. Motherfucker. That's right. By the way, look for Heatwave, the full-length production, later this month at Theatre Aquarius. Props to Theatre Aquarius, by the way. I did their summer camp in the 90s with Marta Hankin, I think, and Lou Zamprogna. I'm very happy to be doing this. How are you, by the way? I do this podcast on fractions of borrowed time when I'm not restlessly aching and dragging my ass through a week at an unkeptly managed factory or loving my girlfriend and our cat. And I've been recording and creating things since I was 12, and I'm 33 now, for perspective. I've been officially in broadcast media since 2006 in some way, shape, or form, from FM radio to YouTube to finally my biggest love, podcasts. I had to think, what is my show and what makes the show different? I love Grandma's Virginity. I love Harmontown, and this feels terrible. And what the fuck with Marc Maron? But I can't do their show. And if I did, I would insist you skip me and listen to them. Fuck me. I then thought, well, I'd like to use my cis straight white privilege for good and be a signal boost for those who are more outsiders than I am. Let's find out just how much of an outsider you can be. Here are they speaking for themselves. What's it like to be gay? A woman. Not white. I'm a hero. And meh. And that's not something I'd be the first to do, even. But it's still good to have that and be open to that. But I can't make that a gimmick. I'm not going to invite people on the show specifically so I can gain points with my fellow lefties. It's going to happen naturally. So if I'm still on angles, I can do the angle of one. Well, you might be familiar with talk shows and shit, but Todd's show, guess we go deeper. We get personal. Ah, shit, that's also been done. What does Todd's Cafe do that's unique? if we're being open and honest and transparent, I mean, I'm not a narcissist and I don't hate myself, but I'm truly unremarkable. But how about the fact that it's me doing the show? And I put it in the name. This show is it's the millennial age equivalent of my Generation X blogging habits. The muckety muck of my brain comes out and you drink it, and I feature co-hosts and guests who can get down with that and pour over the minutiae of existence with me, and you figure it out. We'll philosophize like you do at a cafe with personal friends. We'll empathize and throw turds at the machine like fucking monkeys and try and laugh at everything that can still be laughed at. That's the show. It's Todd's Cafe. Lick it. So, all right, we had a bit of a chat beforehand. It was mostly me talking, of course. On the show is Emily and Erica joining us. I will leave what happens in the play, and then we can talk about the production. But I want to know about the play right now itself and the story that it tells.
Okay, so I'll start. I'm Erica, and I wrote The Frog King, which also actually has three different iterations. There's a 10-minute version called Labels that we did at Hamilton just this past spring. And then we're doing The Frog King for Outfest here in Kitchener. And also we're doing the total play, which is a 45-minute play called Heatwave for Hamilton Fringe. But here we're talking about The Frog King version. Mm-hmm. And so it's basically a play about a lesbian couple where one partner is hiding their wish to transition, okay, and the other partner finds out by accident.
Now, in your timeline of creativity, where does this fall? Is this your first play, or is this the latest of?
This is the latest play I wrote. It's actually the latest play I wrote. I have written two other plays before. They're also queer plays. One is called Under the Fire, which was a co-creation with Kira Myers-Keaton, and Emily was part of that as well.
Nice.
Emily and I like to work together, which is great. So she's been on board.
She's stuck with me now.
I feel she's stuck with me. So, and then there's also we're doing another play that I wrote called The Menno Play, and that's being done here in Kitchener in the beginning of December, the first weekend of December, and it's about a Mennonite woman coming out in a church.
Wow.
Yeah, The Frog King is it's in several different festivals this year. So we're gonna be at Outfest, but we are also at Hamilton Fringe, and we've just done Labels.
Well, since you've done it, it doesn't sound like you find it demeaning at all to have to take something and create a shorter version of it, because obviously it was done with intention. Like you didn't just allow someone to be like, oh, this goes.
No, it was basically taking the bones of the play,
right,
and you know, making The Frog King.
So when people go to see Outfest and they see that performance and production, they're still getting a valuable telling of that story.
Oh, for sure, yeah, absolutely, for sure.
And I kind of see it more as sort of that segment of the story.
Okay. Mm.
So it's like anybody's day-to-day life. You know, like in a movie, you see the highlight reel of the best action, the worst action. Yeah. Whereas, like, you know, every sort of segment of the play that we perform is a complete story in and of itself.
Right. Mm.
But it's part of the story, because we also don't see what happens after the final curtain comes down.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. The play ends with just a big question. I mean, I always like to write stories that are just from everyday people. And I'm queer. I'm a queer woman. So my stories often tend to be queer, because that's the people I hang out with. Mm. That's the people whose lives I actually see. But yeah, in this particular story, there is no answer. There's no prescriptive sort of like, this is what's going to happen to this couple now. Basically, the audience is left with wondering, I mean, can they make it through this, or will they, you know?
Personally, I love ambiguities. That's mm-hmm. why certain filmmakers, for instance, get me. And the very same things, like ambiguity that I might like, other people dislike. They're like, why can't you just spoon feed me the answers to the questions I have? Well, no, it's because, from my point of view, you're supposed to think about it and wonder and draw your own conclusions and allow yourself to go to a place where maybe it turns out this way, mm-hmm. and react to it in your feelers. Inside
in the
medical term.
Exactly.
Used to work in a hospital right over there.
I think it's mostly also for me the idea that often members of the queer community are sort of seen as a homogenous community. Like, we all believe, you know how when you have like, it's kind of weird because when people, when I say I'm queer, someone will say, oh, I know another queer person. Do you know that queer person? You know?
It's like, do you know this queer man from Toronto? Yeah,
exactly. And often people make the assumption that because we're all part of the queer club, we all have everything in common, right? Yeah. And including our belief systems, which is not true. And so this play in particular is an opportunity to show the world that queer people don't have the answers to all of these questions either, right?
If anything, you share one commonality, and that's that you have to deal with ignorant people.
Exactly. Well, that's true. That's true. A lot of that, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, too, there's a belief maybe from people that are kind of outside looking in on the queer community that, you know, everyone's going to behave a certain way.
Right.
Or everyone's going to always have the answers or always react positively to someone else coming out.
Mm-hmm.
So within The Frog King, I play Mia, who is the character who is not transitioning and the one who finds out that the partner is transitioning.
Right.
And without kind of giving too much away, one thing I really enjoy about my character is that she doesn't have the right answers right away.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really refreshing for people who are straight, gay, bi, queer, whatever, to see.
If the queer community doesn't have these answers, if we, the people who are living these lives, don't have the answers, then it's much more possible for straight people to go, okay, we don't get this either, but we're willing to look at it, right? We're willing to look at this with you because you don't even have the answers, right? We're all just struggling with these labels and these experiences that we don't really have language for yet.
Yeah.
Identities evolve, and I think kind of the main takeaway is don't be an asshole about someone else's identity.
Yeah, I would say that's true. Yeah.
I suppose, like, the human reaction to I don't understand what's going on here is isolating in a good way because it allows you to realize that I'm experiencing a lack of understanding right now alone, which makes me an individual,
right?
Which makes other straight people I know an individual themselves. Hopefully that translates to them understanding that, like, non-heterosexuals also are individuals too.
Yeah, for sure.
And human beings. And not you, but the character that you play has an initial human reaction, which is okay, but with better understanding. I don't even know the plot, but I do want to ask, as much as you can tell me without spoiling anything, what people would get on the book jacket.
Yeah, so basically it's a play about a lesbian couple. They've been together for some time, and Danny, who is the transitioning partner, has gone to see an endocrinologist and has gotten a prescription that Mia doesn't know about. Right. So, and from there, basically the big story is, and I wrote this play from a non-transitioning partner's point of view because I'm not non-binary. I identify as a cis woman. And so I don't know what it's like to be someone who is not okay in their body, who doesn't feel like the body they're in is actually who they are.
Right.
But I do know what it's like to be the non-transitioning partner. And, you know, the questions that you ask yourself then, like if Danny is not a lesbian anymore because he's going to be a dude,
right,
then what is Mia, right? And so those it's really just more an impulse for questioning, right? How do we define our identities and who defines them for us? And once they're defined, do we stay there or can we move, you know?
We got this thing going on right now that might be out of date by the time this podcast goes online. Where, you know, on the other side of that dichotomy is people who just love the way it was for women and queer people in the 60s.
Mm.
Can't we just keep it like it was in the 60s where anyone could just make fun of anything? And
yeah, we do hear that a lot, I think, in the queer community. I think that we have to always remember that our truth is not everyone else's truth, right? Like, and that's one of the reasons why I wrote this play from the perspective of the non-transitioning partner, is because I don't know what that truth is for someone else, right? I can't even really actually imagine what it's like because I feel at home in my body. You know?
So you don't picture your play, and pardon my getting off the rails, but I do want to come back to the play. I'm sorry about that.
No problem.
But do you picture the play you wrote as an imagining of that, though?
The play I wrote is, to me, it's important that people tell the stories that belong to them.
Okay.
And I guess I'm trying to explain what I mean by that is that it's important that, for example, queer people tell queer stories as opposed to straight people telling queer stories.
Yeah.
Or say, like, having a man write a bunch of stories about lesbian teenage girls.
Right. Yeah.
That's maybe not his story to tell.
Like, right? And so
it's his fantasy to have, but it's not his story to tell.
Yeah. And so for, like, the parts that I wrote for Danny, because, of course, Danny is a big part of this play when he talks to me about what it's like for him, right?
Right.
Of course, I had to write lines for Danny, and I talked to a lot of people who identify as non-binary and said, "Hey, what's your experience with this? Like, what is it like to not be okay in your own body?" You know, okay. But that's not my experience. My experience is, what is it like to have all these beliefs about yourself, and then one moment in life happens, and all of them are shattered. Mm-hmm. What's that like?
And I think that's hugely relatable. You know, anybody that has like a marriage end or, mm-hmm. you know, a relative die, a pet die, mm-hmm. like it doesn't matter what the situation is. Your life can literally turn on a dime.
Yeah.
And that's basically what happened for this couple, right? Something happened. There was someone finds a prescription and suddenly life, as you knew it, is all over, right? Yeah. Whatever is next for that couple, we never find out. We don't know what's next for them, but we know that it's not going to be what was before.
I said a very pessimistic thing before about how, like, we can change terminology, but, like, can we work on changing people for the better?
Cool. Now, I do want to challenge you on that a little bit. What do you mean when you say terminology? Let's get really deep into this.
Yeah.
I can safely say that I discovered that I now used to have friends from high school and college who like to express political views all the time and social views just to as an FU to everyone because of the way the world's going. Comedians used to be able to say this on stage. Now, first of all, get over yourself because comedy has evolved over time to change in battling racism so much.
Oh, absolutely. And like, I personally do a lot of comedy. I do a lot of improv as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the main rules for good comedy is you always punch up.
Right.
Because it's too easy to punch down. And frankly, it gets boring and it gets old.
Yeah.
But if you can find a new way to tell a joke, a new way to tell a story, you know, maybe humble yourself.
Yeah.
Or humble people above you. Like.
And there's a reason why comedians from the 40s and 50s wouldn't get laughs now. Because.
Yeah.
Or comedians now wouldn't get laughs back then because times have changed. And I think these guys are holding on to a time when they felt like the world was a lot more symbol to them.
But can I challenge you on the 40s and 50s here? Because I don't know, when was the movie Click made? It's an Adam Sandler movie. Do you guys remember?
That's gotta be like,
it's fairly recent, right?
Yeah.
I was recently.
That's 12 years ago?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I don't
know. I was recently watching this movie with my grandchildren, there is one scene in it where Adam Sandler's wife is dressed as a native person with headgear, and there's her little boy is dressed as a cowboy, and he's chasing, you know, and he calls her Pocahontas.
Right.
And that was literally like not that long ago, right? Yeah. And we all laughed at that movie when it first came out. Well, maybe some of us didn't, but I, mm-hmm. you know, I think I did at the time.
Yeah.
And now my understanding is different, of course. And when I look at this, I go, wow, like how could big names have even lent themselves to this, right?
Because it's such cultural appropriation. And also just even the story of Pocahontas is not what we think of with the Disney version.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
There's an entire era of Western civilization that was like centered around the Western movement movies.
Mm-hmm.
People wanted to see was a Western with cowboys and, you know,
Or like for a while it was zombies. Like there's trends no matter how we go. Like one thing I do think we have to kind of acknowledge though is that, you know, just because something is not okay anymore, I'm trying to think how to word this, but I think it's more we have to look at it with the lens of we can do better and we can be better.
Yeah.
Versus, oh, you're bad and wrong if you like this. Like,
Because that's a climate where people can't then say, I was wrong, right? I was wrong, and now I'm thinking about this differently. And that's kind of what we're hoping to do, really. Yeah. I think that's what Outfest is hoping to do, is to show stories to people that at one point wouldn't have been, you know, even okay to show on stage. And now we're saying, like, for example, Mia's character is really quite ignorant in the play in the beginning. Mm-hmm. I've heard people say that in the 10-minute version, we don't see her really changing. So I've heard people say, wow, Mia comes off as really badly, you know, in this particular version. But that's how we evolve, right? We learn that the thinking we have been using is not correct anymore. But there's no shame in that. Shame is knowing it and then continuing to do the things that you know are no longer correct, right?
Right.
But by having this climate where we'd make it almost okay, not okay for people to say, hey, that used to be me. I laughed at that movie, right? There is no way for us to change then. Because no one wants to be called out as, you know, the dummy who did that. So,
I'm the rare opposite where I love if people call me on shit because I'm like, this is the only way I can get better.
Mm.
But I acknowledge that I'm the very rare person that will eat my humble pie.
Yeah.
And then step up.
Well, yeah. I'm just putting myself in your shoes. Like, I'm trying to train myself, but I'm not a good trainer. Like, I'm a very willing student, and I'm trying to train myself to evolve at the rate that I want to. I'm just paraphrasing what I think you're saying. Sometimes, like, if I fail as a self-trainer, if someone else calls me on it, thank you for helping the training process.
Yeah, of course.
I think, like, a couple great things you can do if you want some tips. For one thing, you can always ask people the pronouns.
I was still characterizing you.
Oh, me. Okay.
But that's the thing. Like, when I say terminology, I mean, when if people who hate all that isn't straight, they can learn and use all the non-offensive terms that we have as of right now, and they can substitute him or her for them or whatever proper language terminology, but they still have the hate, they still have the lack of understanding. So if we're changing the terms, the next and only important step too is to try and change the understandings, which is, to reiterate, not for a shameless plug, one great aspect of Page One Entertainment getting itself out there, literally and figuratively. I would hope for the best for any theater group, because it's a struggle as an art form to grab people away from their devices, you know?
Yes.
Is that the proper term? Devices now? Yeah. Cell phone? It's a device.
From their social media?
Yeah.
The intertubes?
Yeah.
Or from their comfort zone, even.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think evolution is a process. What a bold stance, Todd. Something that everyone thinks. I think with the terminology, we can upgrade that. But again, people themselves have to evolve.
For sure. And I think one thing that's really important for people to sort of recognize or think about is that, you know, things like gender identity, things like relationships, like, it's not like a slice of pie where if I'm dating a woman, you don't get to date that woman.
Right.
It's kind of more like, you know, lighting other people's candles with your candles.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that a lot. Yeah.
Like, there is room in the world for everyone. And, you know, just because people have different beliefs doesn't mean that they can never speak or one's right and one's wrong.
Right. The most obvious segue anyone's ever had, I'm going to refer to the email to make sure that we still make sure that we cover some good points to promote the play. And the segue itself being that my cat is audibly to us in the room doing her litter box thing, her little litter box dance.
I do love that she climbed in there as soon as you said literally. Like, that seemed to be... I noticed
maybe,
that. I was
maybe you're a better trainer than you think.
Yeah, she has telepathy and onomatopoeia.
And she's really fluffy.
Yeah, she is. Just to let you, in podcast land, know, the Frog King is a part of Outfest, which is, I'm looking for the date, but you know.
September 20th, 22nd.
Four shows.
And at the Registry Theater in Kitchener.
Yeah.
What part of the week is that? Is that Saturday and Sunday?
Thursday to Saturday.
Thursday to Saturday. Yeah. Awesome.
So there's a show Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday matinee, and then a Saturday night show.
I don't work on Saturdays, so I will. I look forward to it.
You can even come twice.
The show, the entire showcase is 3 one-act plays and 3 musical numbers,
and two dance numbers.
So there'll be a little bit of everything, and it's don't think it's going to be hugely long. I think someone told us today it was like the whole thing
85 minutes.
Yeah, plus intermission. Yeah. So I think it runs at 115 minutes. So it's not like you're going to be trapped in the theater. Yeah.
It's like less than the length of Infinity War.
Yeah, exactly.
And of course, tickets and more info can be found at pg1entertainment.com. That's verbatim from the email. I do want you to know that, and I'm just being quirky, like I'm algorithmically making fun of professional radio hosts. Yeah. Do you consider yourselves professional creatives? Is that your mainstay?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Lucky. Yeah. It's awesome. Not so lucky. It takes hard work to get there. I'm just a jealous ass sometimes.
That's okay. That's showing what you really want to do, right?
Yeah.
See, I would say, like, I consider myself an actor and filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
So outside of performing, I do video creation for businesses and live events. So that's a little bit kind of more how I pay my bills.
Yeah.
While the acting sometimes pays well and sometimes doesn't.
Right. I think one thing that I want the listener to take away from that is that you don't just arrive there out of college or university.
Oh no, like. I'm going to date myself a little, but I used to think that if I wasn't completely famous by 25, my life would be over.
That's another long conversation that I have with some people, like about how people look at things as a threshold because they're brainwashed to believe that life exists on a timeline.
Yeah.
And what do you do when life stops making sense, when you haven't gotten married or had kids or done this by a certain time in your life?
Yeah.
Well, and I think there's kind of a nice parody to gender identity and, you know, sexual preference there too. Like, something that works for person A is not going to work for person B.
Yeah.
Some people get married before they have kids. Some people have feline children and no children, no human children.
Some people are in straight marriages and have kids and then come out, right?
Yeah.
I mean, when I first came out, I remember actually thinking that I couldn't be a lesbian because I was married and had kids.
Right.
And so automatically that must mean that I can't be that. Even though I felt like that and my attractions were that way, I was telling myself I couldn't be that because I had a husband and kids. Until I talked to someone and they said, oh, honey, all the lesbians were married and had a husband and kids, which is not true. But, you know, the large majority actually did. So it's not like we are born with this, knowing this. Sorry, Emily.
No, I was going to say too, and it's not something we teach in school.
Right.
So both, you know, what your life might look like and also the business of art, which is 2 separate subjects.
Yeah.
But and for me, identity wise, I'm very bisexual. I'm pretty much right in the middle. Like, I'm married to a man, but I still find women attractive. You know, we'll date other people when I can, and he knows about it. That's a whole other conversation. Yeah. Polyamorous is great.
Well, I think some people think that I'm only attracted to people 50% because it's divided among 2 genders.
Well, again, it goes back to kind of my candle analogy where, you know, if you light one candle with another candle, you're not going to take away from the first one's flame. They're both going to have big pretty flames.
Yeah.
Also, I really liked fire. You know, just to throw something fun in there.
In the Mennonite church, we used to sing this song. Maybe they sang that in other churches too, but love being like a magic penny, you know. You hold on to it, you won't have any.
Mm-hmm.
You spend it and you'll have more, right? And I think that that's kind of how I see love. And I think we're starting to move more towards that kind of loving. It's more acceptable now. It's not that you're dividing the pie in half, right? It's actually the idea that there is no pie, right? That there is just enough for everyone.
And if you think about it too, we love a lot of different people in different ways. Like, you know, we love our family, we love our best friends, we love our pets. So to say, you can only be partnered with one person romantically, beep boop, you're a robot.
Yeah.
You know, you must love only them. That's bullshit.
We have now sort of gotten to the point where we accept that sexuality is fluid, that I could have started out as straight and I might have moved over to, you know, same-sex relationships and I might move back again, and that's perfectly fine, which hasn't always been the case. When I came out over 20 years ago, it wasn't okay to be bisexual. You had to pick, you know, one or the other. Either you're straight or you're queer, but you can't be in the middle. Well, you could be, but then you were a fence-sitter or, you know,
you're
whatever.
A traitor one side
exactly,
or the
gender
other,
traitor, you know, that kind of thing. Getting buy on hetero privilege. And we've moved away from that, thank goodness, right?
Yeah,
like, but now we're kind of doing the same thing with gender, right? Like when people want to transition, they have to pick a box on either side. So I was a man and now I'm a woman. I was a woman, now I'm a man. When the truth actually is, for a lot of people, they identify as non-binary, which means I'm not this and I'm not that. Yeah. I'm somewhere in the middle, right? And it might change day by day. Today I might feel more on this side and tomorrow I might feel more on that side.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, and with the case of our play, with Danny choosing to take the prescription for testosterone, that is kind of making a decision to move towards male.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just to kind of tie that back to what we're here for.
Right? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But also, yeah, like, I think it's only within, like, the last 5-10 years that non-binary has really become...
Not even that long, I would say maybe 3 years.
I've known people for longer than but
that have identified as non-binary.
Yeah,
yeah. But well, you're from Toronto, I'm from Hamilton. That's the difference.
But it's also, it's, you know, like, there are a lot of times and places where it's not safe for people to express their identity.
Right.
Yeah.
For sure.
No, it's like, it's destructive, but having a dichotomy is like a huge comfort zone for our species. As it has been.
Always,
and it still is in most places. Again, plays like the Frog King happening at Outfest are a huge and wonderful thing, and I think hopefully a part of evolving this.
I think you touched earlier on, you know, being...
Like, I'm pretty touchy, yeah.
Yeah, your spiritual beliefs being more Eastern religion, really. And I think what they have got so right is that they acknowledge the fact that two things can be true, two opposing things can be true at once, right? Mm. So to put it like in perspective, for example, I can, if I've broken up with someone, I can miss them and be glad that they're not here. Yeah. At the same time.
Yeah, you could sympathize with someone
I can actually feel both things,
yeah.
Right? I can feel sad that they're gone, and I can feel glad that they're gone, mm-hmm. which I think Western spirituality doesn't allow for that very much. We want one or the other. Oh, that's I'm glad they're gone. I never want to see them again, and I don't miss them at all, right?
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, you know, also guilt and shame, and because Sky Daddy says so.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Whereas Eastern, and that is sort of more where I came from in writing Frog King, is Eastern philosophy, which is, you know, two things can be true at the same time, right?
Yeah.
I can want for Danny to be the person he wants to be, and I can feel really sad and ripped off that I don't get the person that I signed up for, right?
Yeah.
Both are true.
You out there, I mean, like, you need to allow humanity to be the beautiful thing that it is, which is complex enough to be...
Right.
Yeah. I feel like we are getting there, but, you know, for anybody who's listening, anybody who's questioning this,
mm-hmm.
I think one kind of the main question to keep in mind is it hurting you in any way for these other people to be living their lives?
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a challenge to the podcast audience, but really look at that, really consider that.
Yeah. And I don't know who said this, but before you say things, ask yourself, is this stupid?
That would be an excellent question also. Yes.
Yeah. Well,
walk away from Facebook for 5 minutes before you hit post.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Man, I gotta remember that more often.
They sell filters at Walmart. Get some filters. And you know what? Far be it for me to think that I have anyone in the audience so far. I mean, at all in my podcast. But far be it for me to think that I have anyone at this point who is on the opposing side of what we're trying to talk about.
Right,
here.
Right.
Yeah.
So we're preaching to the choir, is what you're saying.
Hopefully. But
yeah.
I like my job as a hat trick privileged guy, you know, what's it like being a straight white male? Membership has its privileges.
For sure,
All over the place.
We actually have a line about that in the show.
Yeah, there is a line in there, yeah.
It's not my line even.
You're trading up, honey.
You know?
I just got so lost in loving that fact, I guess. I'm kidding. I'm trying to remember what I was starting to say. Being that as it may, there's a role that we have if someone who's straight, white, and male, or any of the ones that have the most power and acceptance out there. I guess I'm trying to figure out ways that I can outwardly, instead of, like, I can talk about it, and I feel like I'm giving myself a cookie all the time.
Yeah,
when I listen back, I'm like, I'm communicating, but like when I put this out there, I'm going to hate myself. I'll just edit it all out.
Well, I think one of the things you can do as someone who's, you know, straight, cis, white, and a dude, mm-hmm. so you actually have 4 points of privilege.
Yeah.
Talk to your other buddies.
Yeah.
Like if you see somebody, you know, oh, I'd rape that chick. Mm-hmm. Maybe tell him, hey, dude, fuck off. Like,
yeah.
mm-hmm. And whether that's a stranger, whether that's a friend. Like, one thing I have noticed is that a lot of men, for better or worse, will respond to feedback from other men mm-hmm. better than from women.
Yeah.
Just as kind of like a quick generality.
Yeah, it's right. true.
But like,
absolutely.
You know, how many women does it take to say, oh, this is a problem, versus one man says, oh, hey, that's a problem for her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or even when you see in professional environments where, you know, a woman or an AFAB means assigned female at birth. So mm-hmm. someone that presents as feminine or was feminine, if they present an idea, it might get glossed over. But then if the man presents the same idea 10 minutes later, he'll get praised for it.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I think it's like there's a sort of, for me, a grad, you know, sort of almost like it starts with, okay, we tolerate someone. Right. Mm-hmm. And that I think has been the experience of the queer community when they're interacting with the heteronormative community is we are being tolerated. I mean, we're not being asked to leave restaurants anymore, at least not very often. We're not, you know, that happens. Yeah. That happened to me when I first came out. That doesn't happen anymore. And then we sort of move to this sort of, I call it pseudo acceptance, you know, where it's okay, we'll let the queers come to our events, you know, and we actually invite them and stuff. And then there's embracing, right? Embracing yeah. the queer community, which is, hey, dude, you know, we yeah. care about you and we've had our turn as yeah. white, straight people, you know, let's give a turn to people who are not white and straight. You know, I find that white men in general have a really hard time with that. They want to say, yes, of course, we love our queer brothers and sisters, our transgender brother and sisters, as long as it doesn't actually cost us anything. Right.
Yeah.
And sometimes it is knowing about when to take that step back and let someone else talk. Mm-hmm. Even something I see in my own work is that, you know, if I see a person of color in the room who's struggling to be heard, I will take steps to amplify their voice
mm-hmm. yeah.
or sit back and let them speak. And like, it's creating room for people who haven't had room at the table.
Mm-hmm. And maybe you're a straight white guy who is a great playwright and can, you know, wants to write about lesbians. And maybe you could write a really good play about lesbians, but maybe you shouldn't, you know, yeah. maybe you should give a lesbian a chance to write a play about lesbians.
Yeah. Yeah. Give her some money, give her some, you know.
Yeah, that's how you can support if she wants it, right? Like.
Yeah, yeah.
I have this yeah. great idea for a play, but maybe that's not your story. Find someone whose story yeah. it is.
There can be the excuse that, we didn't have anyone on the yeah. staff who represented that, so we just decided to write it for them. Well,
put out a hiring call.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I ask anyone if you have a story.
I studied with Brian Quirt from the Tarragon, and he's director at Night Swimming. And I remember we're talking about there was a play at the Tarragon that had a disabled character, and the character was not the actor was not disabled. And there was this discussion in the room where, you know, people said, well, you know, it's really hard to get disabled actors; we couldn't find them. And Brian Quirt just made it super clear that if you can't find the person, then you don't do the play.
Yeah.
It's just that simple, really.
Stick to what you know, for one thing. And
yeah.
not like our stories need to be told that as much, but
they've been told, right? They've been told.
Yeah. They've been told, and it's better for you to just if you're straight, white, male, creative,
mm-hmm.
you know, stick to what you know and speak mm-hmm. speak for you guys.
and do your best to amplify other voices.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like Night Swimming, for example, in Toronto, that's exactly what they do, right? Mm-hmm. They make sure that they have a platform for people whose voices and stories aren't heard mm-hmm. and that they back that platform with absolutely. Money and, you know, promotion and...
Yeah.
Because yeah, even one thing that we did with this play is we felt it was really important to cast a genderqueer or non-binary actor in the role of Danny.
And we've had so much trouble with that. We really have. We've gone through. We've lost actors. There's not that much. There hasn't been that much interest. But it's super important to us that we don't write. We don't present this play with, you know, someone who's not.
Yeah, someone who's straight and cis. And
yeah, yeah.
That wouldn't happen. Feel right for any of us. Like.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can edit this pause. I was gonna make like a stupid joke, like you know how when people sometimes who go to like a restaurant, they're like, is this chicken from a local farm?
Oh, organic and grass fed and
yeah. Like
ethically sourced.
Yeah. This is an ethically sourced farm fresh.
Yeah.
With no farms, though. There were no farms, by the way, used in the... Yeah. No. But I'm just saying, like, it's that authentic.
It's really important that we... that I think that we tell stories that are authentic in this time, at this time in life, you know, in the world. Why are we doing it if we're not telling true stories, right? Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I was going to say part of that, too, is I think it's really important for people to see themselves on screen.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's one thing I think you kind of touched on earlier, where... you know, white dudes have seen themselves on screen forever and on stage. But, you know, for women, for people of color, for people with fat bodies, disabled bodies, how do they see themselves if they see themselves at all?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, for me as an actor, I've had so many auditions for, like, Whore Number 3.
Oh, man.
And I just, you know, like, I'm disgusted that that's what women are cast on.
Yeah.
Or I'll see casting calls. It's like, oh, tall, fit, attractive. Whereas men are, you know... oh, intelligent and charismatic with a...
yeah.
Right.
It's okay. We don't really need to know how you look as long as you're a man.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's something else that needs to change is, you know, how we cast stories, how we write stories, how we present them, and the bodies we put in those roles.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Which is why we love working with Page One Entertainment, because they are all about real identity, right?
Yeah.
Real people, real stories. It's not like some sugar-coated, you know, fairy tale. Although the Frog King is a fairy tale, but...
well, we talk about a fairy tale.
We talk about a fairy tale. We talk about how fairy tales don't work, really.
Right.
So.
It's probably better that I'm focused enough to not have anything ready, to, like, have the gun cocked or whatever.
It's super,
literally.
It's super cool you're taking us on. I mean, you're you know, you identified as cis straight male, right? You're taking on these two queer chicks who are like bashing the white dudes, right?
I don't feel like we are though.
No, not at all.
I am definitely one straight white cis male with all that comes with. I don't know from experience, but I try to listen as much as I can to what people who don't have that security. Metaphorical security and literal and some as an individual, I don't relate to the mass of political conservative and right wing alt nationalists.
Oh, like the men going their own way and MRA and all that.
Yeah, the incels and Nazis.
Yeah. See, I think what that comes down to is choosing not to be a monster.
Yeah,
and that's.
But I will listen and proudly absorb the feelings that people have towards all of us, even if it has to be just blandly played. Like you men.
I don't think most people do that though. Like most women I know, if they're like, "Oh, men suck," it's like, "Oh, hey, I got five pictures of five different guys' dicks today, and I'm really sick of that."
Yeah.
Versus, whereas with a lot of these incels and. You know, people that are perpetuating the hate.
Yeah.
It's, oh, women suck and we want to kill them.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's, I think it's important to recognize that distinction.
Yeah.
And like, at least for me personally, and most of the people in my social circle, you know, like I feel when we talk about like those guys, quote unquote, I'm making air quotes here. You can't see that.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's important for sort of the good men in our life to realize that we're not talking about them. And I think, too, like, we do get wrapped up in a lot of identity politics where, like, you know, you're starting with, oh, I'm straight, I'm white, I'm cis. This is something that we talk about in the play as well, where, like, you know, sometimes, if I can swear on this, fuck your labels.
Mm.
Like, there's no censor.
Yeah. But, like, also, you know, sometimes it's good to do away with kind of those parts of our identity and just relate on a human level.
Yeah.
Which I think is something you were saying earlier.
Absolutely. Yeah. Right.
And toxic masculinity does not mean all men are bad.
Right.
It means that it's a way that we have been socialized, you know, from birth, where it's things like, oh, well, you know, men aren't allowed to express their feelings. To be manly, you have to do these things. A man should take care of the family. It's these completely antiquated, completely bullshit beliefs that I think lead to a lot of this hate, a lot of this frustration. Or like, or, you know, men are entitled to sex. Men should, you know, get the best jobs at work.
Mm-hmm.
Men have to be aggressive. Like, and I think that's where, like, I feel like this is where a lot of the hate is spiraling to and coming from. Whereas I think a lot of people don't recognize that it's something that's been instilled in us.
Yeah. And I think technology, we're going so far off the rails. I love that this is a longer episode, and I will only edit out my big buts, M's and A's, and drop offs. In full agreement with that, there's this funny thing where every time I personally absorb discussions like these, I can learn more about my own story in a different way, because I grew up as an ugly, lonely, fat guy. For the longest time, I was jealous of everyone until I turned 24 one day and I lost my virginity. But up until that, everyone else was. I didn't feel like it was entitled to me. I just didn't know what to do. And, you know, looking back, what you didn't realize, younger me, is that you had to be the aggressor and you're not capable of predatory.
It's not just that. It's the way that, you know, women are taught to say no when they mean yes. Mm. Again, it's bullshit. It's these so outdated ways we have of doing things. But also, like I share the same experience. I grew up, I was fat. I was like the one queer kid in a high school of 500 people. I was queer and I was pagan.
Yeah.
So I was the outcast. Like, I still remember grade 2, one of my supposed best friends walking me through dog shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I grew up bullied. I grew up fat. I grew up ugly. But even through that, and through my pain and through my anger, I chose not to be a monster.
Like, that's you're right on what I'm trying to say, but better. And it's amazing what better perspective of the human race you can get, or how to deal with things and communicate when you're an outsider. It's a blessing, and that's how I chose to see it later on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I grew up feeling like I'm an outsider for all these things and the people that push me down. But as a male, I back in the day, with this limited understanding of life that I had at the time, I could have easily been a prime candidate for incel-like group recruiting.
Mm-hmm. And is that terrifying for you to realize? Like,
not really, because at first I chose to dive in and be terrified about that. I thought about every song that I wrote as a musician up until a certain point, and how much of that reflected what I saw was going on today.
Mm.
Now, I was lucky enough to be just social enough and not have devices at the time. No access. We didn't have that in every fucking home.
Right.
I had access to just enough friendships that told me to look at things differently at the right age. And the other thing was I chose to hate myself. Now, that's a bad thing. But I chose to hate myself.
Rather than take it on other people.
And I gravitated towards female friends who kept me in check and said, get over this, and blah, blah, blah. I'd understood everyone else on the planet from the bottoms of their feet. Like, they were all on the same level to me.
See, which is amazing, but, like, I think this ties back into what I was saying earlier with your story where, you know, you're told as a man, you know, you're not a man until you have sex.
Mm.
And to have a romantic relationship is the be-all and end-all.
Right.
Which I think is more outdated thinking that society perpetuates.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I have to find the one. The one.
The one.
You know, even if someone isn't polyamorous, though, like, what does that... Who the fuck is the boss that will confirm who the one is for you? Yeah. Maybe the one died 80 years before you were born. How do the... Like,
yeah. And I think there is no the one. There can be, you know, this person for right now.
Yeah.
And maybe that grows into a long-term relationship and maybe it doesn't.
Or just a really wonderful one person.
Yeah.
Because everyone's going to die anyway. And that's the beautiful thing about life, how we do with the time that we have.
Oh, yeah. But I know, like, even for me in high school, I was like, oh, well, I'm going to marry this person and we're going to settle down forever. And life's going to be grand because that's what Disney taught me.
Yeah, yeah.
But also then when relationships end, like, I was married to a woman for 10 years. It was a wonderful relationship. And people say to me now, are you sad about that failure?
Right.
I don't consider it a failure, you know.
Right.
How can something that was good for 10 years that really nourished me and fed me and filled me up. How could that have been a failure just because it ended? Is something not good just because it ends? I mean, we all end at some point, right?
And it goes back to that Eastern duality where it can be both.
It can be both, right? Yeah. And the problem with the one always is also that and we think that each person we meet and we get engaged in a long-term relationship, because that's what we all want, is these long-term relationships, then we can't actually... I can't tell you how many times I've heard when I'm dating someone, but you can't hang out with your exes, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're dangerous somehow to our relationship. And once a relationship is over, it's over. But is that really true, right? Mm-hmm. Does it really have to be true? And when we move away from that thinking that there is one only, then we can move away from that too, right? We can move away from discarding people because they're no longer the one.
Right. Yeah.
And I think too, like, especially with our contemporary society, you know, things like Tinder, where you can keep swiping forever, we do tend to treat people as disposable now.
Yeah.
That's something I'm glad to have someone else
acknowledge.
Yeah, I wanted to just say think as well, but I want acknowledgement. I want cookies, and I want... It is my right as a man
to get a cookie.
Yeah,
you have to come
go
to
bake
the dark
your own damn
side.
Cookies.
Yeah. Crap. Can I have either of or both of you back on the show again?
For sure.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. We'd love to.
I can talk for hours, and I'm loud and shouty.
Let's split the atom 12 times in over the course of 4 years. Contract printed.
Yeah. No, let's do it.
Yeah.
Once again, if you stuck with us, thank you. Your evolutionary process will thank you down the road.
You will find Frog King dishes enlightening and entertaining.
Probably more without that Todd guy talking.
It was actually a pleasure. Yeah. Really enjoyed it.
I appreciate your time very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
And once again, the Register Theater on the dates of Thursday through Saturday of...
September 20th to 22nd.
Awesome.
Tickets are $20. There's a few that are pay what you can, even if you can't, don't come because you can't afford it. There is pay what you can. I don't know how many, but there are some.
I think about 20 each.
20 each, yeah. Each show has about 20 tickets that are pay what you can. So don't not come because you can't afford $20.
Right. And I used to have the Registry Theater's address memorized off by heart. But the Registry Theater is, of course...
Frederick Street, I believe.
Frederick Street in downtown Kitchener, Ontario, Canada. Just in case. Because we have some listeners in California.
Yeah, for sure.
If you want to fly in for the show, we'll buy you a beer.
There you go. Show us your ticket. We'll take you out for a beer.
And you can find out about getting tickets and other great stuff at pg1entertainment.com. And... that's the website, pg1entertainment.com. But it's Page One Entertainment that's putting this on. And and of course,
that's just their clever company website name.
Yeah. Oh, I think it's awesome. Yeah. And Isaac, I think you're awesome. And I thank you for the introduction. So thanks, Isaac.
Before we wrap, is there anything else you want to ask us about the play?
Is there anything else you'd like to say about it? I'm sorry.
I think, how about you, Emily?
Do you want to talk about your process writing it, or?
I mean, a lot of people ask me if this is my story.
Right.
And I always tell them that it's the impulse came from an incident in my own life. I was with a partner who did transition. But that's about it. So I'm not Mia, you know, and Mia is not me. But yeah, it came, the process came out of something that happened to me in my own life.
Okay. So,
yeah, one other thing I will acknowledge.
Sorry.
Oh, no worries.
Yeah, just before I forget, like you made the character's name Mia. I mean, like the onomatopoeia of you saying like me is not me and I'm not Mia.
What
just happened? Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. No, I dig that. I'm sorry. And you were saying.
Oh, no worries. So one thing I did want to acknowledge is that I think it's really good that our story tells the story of someone who's not 20. Mm-hmm. Because one thing we are seeing in media now, you know, yay, we are seeing representation for trans people, but we're seeing a lot of, oh, I'm 18 and I'm coming out and I'm changing my gender.
Yeah.
Versus, like, I have some friends that are 40s and 50s, and they, you know, they transitioned at, you know, 25, 30, 45. There's people that are senior citizens who are transitioning.
Yeah.
So we also have to acknowledge that this is not just a process for the young.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something where there's an age limit set where it's like, oh, if you can't transition by this age, you're going to be miserable for the rest of your life.
That's actually so true. I'm so glad you're making that point, Emily.
Yeah.
it's important to bring everyone to the table.
Yeah.
And acknowledge that there are more experiences than what we're seeing.
And so many more challenges, really, for people who have lived, like, a large part of their life as one gender, right? And now they're non-binary or switching to something else.
Right.
They have a whole history. Like, I have someone who's been a playwright, a female playwright, and now has to think about whether they want to keep that as part of their work, even,
right,
because that's no longer them, right? And so it means a huge loss for some people in terms of career and like just a huge loss of life, even.
Because
there's something that when you do transition, you have what's usually called your dead name. So right. Like for me, like my name being Emily, if I transition to be a man, I wouldn't use that name anymore.
Right.
And for me as an actor, like I have 40 something credits on IMDb. I have like my whole work history.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like you're literally, like your identity's been wiped.
Yeah.
Which does kind of more harm than good in some ways sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really tough for some people. And one thing we can say at the end is please never ever ask a transgender person what their name was before.
Oh, absolutely.
It's right.
Really not.
Or cool. Ask them what's downstairs.
Yeah, never. So. Etiquette.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't even have a quip or anything. Like I don't have to be glib. That was a fantastic ending. Thank you for being here, and thank you for listening.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
All right. I want to thank you for listening to that chat with Emily and Erica, and I hope you go check out The Frog King. I hope you go check out Outfest happening in September. It's pretty neat. There's going to be more interviews, I suppose, or interview chats with productions happening at this year's Outfest. And I appreciate very much the support from Isaac. Anyway, show wrap-up style wrap-up. Follow us on Instagram at Todd's Cafe. Follow us on Twitter at _ Todd's Cafe. Email us questions, content suggestions, or shit pics, or whatever. Recipes. If you got them and you want to interact with Todd's Cafe, send it to toddscafepodcast@gmail.com. Follow our shit on Facebook by liking the page Todd's Cafe. We're all over the goddamn internet. You can, by the way, find us on iTunes if you're looking at this at toddscafe.ca. We're on iTunes, and that's a place where you can subscribe, rate, and review the show. And all you're doing is clicking some buttons, and good stuff will happen down the road for the show if enough people do that. You don't even have to give us a 5-star rating, but please give us a 5-star rating. But if you don't, there's still a rally of data that they will use to make us look more legit. Thanks for listening to the show. We'll be back next week with the chat with Roshan James. Take care of yourselves. Todd Shows.